Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly you know what why people it's not, outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
So I had somebody reach out to me about 2 weeks ago. That somebody was Matt Swope. Matt is the head baseball coach at the University of Maryland. Matt said, and he's a listener to the show, he said, you know who'd be great at film breakdown, almost like Cooley, is Steve Suter. You should ask him to do it. Steve Suter is a part of the Maryland football radio broadcast team. He and Johnny Holiday call the games. Steve's really good. I've had him on the show many times to talk Terps football, and he's a very good analyst. He's also fearless. He's far from a homer, and he's really good at analyzing football, and he is a big football fan and a lifelong Washington fan as well, although admittedly he's lost some of that passion in recent years, like a lot of us have, but he's back into it again with the results last year. So I asked him if he'd take a swing at breaking down the film from the All-22 and see how it went. He was on my podcast yesterday. He was so good. I'm going to play a portion of that for you right now, about 15 minutes, the very beginning of it, where he gives you kind of the whole layout of the game. He did get into grading players, and you know we can talk about that, and you can listen to it on my podcast. But I wanted you to hear Steve. He's really good. I don't know if he's going to be able to do it every week. It's a lot of work. Cooley used to tell me, he's like, it's basically an all-day thing if you're going to really do it right, you know, breaking down every play, every player on every play. But it started off yesterday on my podcast with me just getting his reaction after watching the All-22 of the loss in Green Bay.
So watching it on the broadcast first, obviously you get those normal impressions as you're watching the game. And I would say you either validate those watching the All-22 or sometimes that can change your mind. So I would say watch it on the broadcast. They just look like they were outmatched, Washington, in all phases, offensively, defensively, and coaching. I had some question marks going in. I prepared, obviously. I watched the Giants game. Then I watched the Packers play the Lions. And what I got off of that was, wow, the Giants were very vanilla on defense. And I'm talking very vanilla. You saw cover three or you saw man coverage, and it was easy and obvious, and there was no – you know, extracurricular stuff in the secondary where they're making disguises and being extravagant and that nature. And so from that standpoint, they got probably 75% man coverage from the Giants. Very vanilla. Then I watched the Packers versus the Lions. Total opposite. A lot of zone and very detailed in the back end and secondary and very extravagant, showing a lot of different shells. If they looked like they were in cover three, they weren't going to end up in cover three. It was a lot of rolling into different coverages. my thoughts were too going into the game. Is that because they're doing that because Jared Goff is a pocket passer and they're trying to make that picture at the back end different on the post snap? And is the Giants, conversely, being very vanilla on defense because they're worried about keeping Jaden in the pocket? So those were things I was trying to pay attention to watching the game. Now, what happened was what the Lions did, what the Packers did to the Lions. They were just very creative at the back end. They gave Jaden Daniels a lot of different pictures and everybody on offense, a lot of zone, almost no man coverage. A couple times they did, they brought pressure, they were successful. So now then you go into the All-22. I was very disappointed, I think, from the coach's standpoint. Clint Kingsbury just didn't seem prepared, in my opinion, because it was obvious what type of coverages they were going to run watching the Lions. So I'm not saying it's easy to decode the coverage live during the game, but you should have gone to that game, if I'm Cliff Kingsbury, with 10 to 12 zone beaters for cover two and for cover three, because that's what you were going to see from the Packers. And then it was up to Jaden and the offense to decipher them. So they weren't prepared. I don't think so. The game plan wasn't good offensively. Defensively, they were very stale. They ran a lot of man coverage and way too easy to decipher for Jordan Love and the Packers. You could see during the game, they started bringing a lot of motion from the receivers and in the corners, you know, Lattimore and the other guys from Washington were following them across the formation. Well, that's an easy tell that you're in man coverage. And once they were given that look to Jordan Love, it was easy pickings. So there's a lot of guys running open, and it's because of the matchups of man coverage, the secondary of the Commanders, they weren't switching correctly. Sometimes they would switch, or what we would call banjo. So one guy's going to take the outside guy, the other guy's going to take the inside guy. Sometimes they tried to stay locked in on their guy, but the communication on the back end wasn't good. So they were messing that up occasionally, and when they were, Jordan Love was making them pay. What I took out from watching the All-22, Jordan Love is top-tier quarterback. Every mistake that the Commanders made on defense, and it was particularly one person or two who made a mistake each play, Jordan Love found it and capitalized on it. A lot of the big plays to Kraft were because the secondary were miscommunicating, and those little mistakes, Jordan Love found them and took care of them.
I think I'm curious first to ask you about the offense of side of the ball, where, you know, you talked about Detroit basically, you know, faced a Green Bay team that was heavy zone, and Cliff Kingsbury should have had more zone beaters against cover two and cover three in particular. How much of that was obvious that they weren't running stuff to beat zone versus the pass rush was very effective and they weren't able to get to it?
So, yeah, it's real easy for the defensive coordinator for the Packers right now, I think it's Halfley.
Yeah.
He's getting pressure without bringing pressure. And the best defenses every year in any level of football are the defense that can get pressure with the front four and they can drop seven in coverage. So he has that luxury, and I think it's probably going to be his game plan for the entire season is to call his base defense, and I say base in air quotes because it's very complex in the back end, but up front it's only usually four people coming. And if he can continue all year going into each game, getting pressure with his front four, then there's no reason to change. Every third down or so, he'll switch it up and he's going to bring some pressure because you're not expecting it because you're getting zoned. So he's going to have that luxury. The games where he's not getting pressure with the front four, he's going to have to change up. So what was successful for him is early on, he's calling these zone plays and he's having the secondary change and roll coverage and his front four is getting pressure. So, he doesn't even have to think, right? His game plan is working, stay the course, because Jaden Daniels isn't going to have enough time. So I'll use a specific example. They had this one coverage. It's really, really intricate. It looks like cover three. You got a deep middle safety, and they ran this against the Lions. I highlighted it because I even said there's no way that anybody can read this coverage correctly. It's just so intricate. Well, the deep middle third safety on the snap of the ball, he bolts down and becomes essentially a linebacker, and he's playing in a curl zone there. And the two corners who you think are playing deep third, they turn into the two safeties, and they play the cover two safety. And so now they still have a cover two shell, but they're doing it from a really odd look. And I just think it's really difficult to read. So they did it against the Lions. It was successful. It gave Goff some problems. They never really completed the pass. Well, they did it on the first third down against Washington. So it turned out to be any time it was like third and eight or longer, they were calling this play. So they did the first third down, and Jaden and them couldn't decipher it. They didn't have a play to beat it. They got pressure from the front four, and so you get an incomplete pass, and you got to punt the football. The second possession, third and seven and longer again, they ran the same inverted cover two, the same look. You would have think Kingsbury would call a play to think it's coming and have a beater for it. They didn't. That's another three and out. So they didn't have an answer for that coverage. One way to attack it, because essentially it's a cover two, is you can either attack it with depth, like you stretch it. We're taking four verticals, or we're taking four people deep, and we're going to try to isolate those safeties that have to try to cover four. But to do that, you need time for those routes to develop.
Right.
And what didn't they have? The Commanders, they didn't have the time. The front four is getting pressure. You know, it wasn't, you don't need a rocket science for me to tell you, you know, Micah Parsons was causing problems every time he was on the field, and everywhere he lined up, he was essentially, if not beating the Commanders' offensive line, he was getting pressure. So just not prepared from that standpoint. And then that type of thing just weighs on a quarterback. And I think during the course of the game, Jaden started just losing trust in his reads, losing trust reading the defense down the field. And then his play clock, his pocket clock was getting shorter and shorter because he didn't trust the offensive line to have protection. All those things add up. And then you go to an offense that's not effective and your quarterback's not reading the field correctly. And if he has a window, if he gets some, usually only one guy game and he just couldn't find him. And like particularly the second possession, I want to say it was, and the second play, Commanders go max protection. And they run a deep comeback to McCullen, to Terry. It's a 15, 8 yard, 18 yard comeback. And they're in max protection. There's only two people going on the route. So this ball is supposed to go to Terry. And Terry's open. And Jaden's looking at him. And for whatever reason, just dumps it off to Eckler on a check down. He just gives up on the play. So that right away was like, oh, man, he's not seeing the field right. Because this play was called to go there. We are blocking everybody to make sure we can get protection to send the ball over there. And you still didn't throw it. And he was open. That's a red flag. So you could just tell from that point on, he wasn't comfortable in the pocket, didn't trust the plays. I agree with him. I didn't like the route concepts that I saw for most of the game. Just weren't in positions to be successful. And then the players on the outside, I mean, I'll be hard on the perimeter guys. You know, Zach Ertz, he looks rough out there at this age. I mean, he's been a great player for so long, but I know he was the leading receiver too, and it's funny for me to say that, but other than the touchdown where he looked a little spry on his cut right after he caught the ball and got some yak and got in the end zone, not really an option for most of the game for Jaden. Terry, not really an option for him most of the game. Wasn't winning on man coverage. The zone routes he was on was either like a 5 yard curl, or he was running a deep corner and he just isn't getting down the field to stretch it. So really a perfect storm for the Commanders on offense, and then the offensive line didn't give him any help. We can get to that specifically, but Connerly had a rough night. He almost 80% of the time, almost every time Micah lined up on him, he beat him, even if he didn't make the play. He was getting beat on his up and under routinely throughout the night. Gary got him on it as well. When they tried to help him with chips, they didn't work. Sometimes they chipped him and it made it worse, or Mike was splitting the double team anyway. Tunsil had a rough time on the edge too as well. Those are my two lowest graded players on offense. It was Connerly by far, and then Tunsil was second there. Offensively, just didn't give him time. You can't let four-man rushes just beat you. Right. If that's the case, you're not going to win. You gotta be able to block against four-man rush.
We'll get to the grades in the next segment, but I have to ask you, why didn't Cliff Kingsbury even attempt to run the football with their rookie running back Krosky Merritt? You know, his nickname, he wants to be called Bill Krosky Merritt. Why didn't they try to run the football more?
I couldn't answer that question because it didn't make sense to me. And what I wrote down, and I was texting a buddy of mine while I was watching the game live. I said, why has it? They did not call a draw for Daniels until the last play of the third quarter. And maybe you just take him for granted that Jaden's going to get you some rushing yards as a quarterback when he scrambles, and you count those as, you know, running plays for your quarterback. But that wasn't the case, and I was disappointed. When you're struggling to move the football and you've got a four-man rush, a draw is a good call, a quarterback draw, especially with Jaden Daniels. The guy can't run, great, because you're going to have the linemen, the linebackers are already bailing. You know they're not blitzing because you're only going to have the four-down linemen, and two of those guys are going to be able to get up to the second level. Utilize Jaden Daniels in the run game. Or you can call a draw as well and hand it off to Bill, like you mentioned. The draws work against those coverages when you have guys all line up on the line of scrimmage. They're trying to fake you out like we're bringing pressure, and then everybody bails, and we're only bringing four. Well, it's an easier job to get to the second level. So don't make the runs obvious, and you're in your 12, 13 personnel, and you're trying to load the box, and you're doing that zone read stuff. They didn't do the zone read effective either, in my opinion. Every person that they left unblocked for the Packers defense, when they left them unblocked, made the play. So the first zone read, they left the zone read. Yeah, he just knifed down and tackled Eckler. He didn't care about Jaden pulling the ball at all because it probably wasn't his responsibility. They got a linebacker ready for him. They don't block Gary, and next time they do a zone read and comes down the line and makes the tackle. And there's another occasion they're doing a zone read. They unblock the defender, and they make the play. So you need to have a better line. The Packers defense didn't respect Jaden Daniels as a runner for this game. And it could have been their game plan going in, saying we're going to play him straight up like he's a normal quarterback that can't scramble. And if he burns us maybe once or twice, then we might make an adjustment. But he never did, so they didn't have to make any adjustments. So it's, again, another easy game for Jeff Hafley to call because the Commanders didn't do any dynamic to make him have to, go outside of what he wanted to do.
You just brought up something that I talked about after the game, and it's funny because I think he had some issues with this last week against the Giants and a couple of times last year. It's been very hard to find anything super critical, constructively critical on Jaden over his first, 22 NFL games. But the zone read they ran early in the first quarter where, as you said, N crashed down, didn't play Jaden at all. I thought it was very obvious that Jaden made the wrong decision. You got to pull that on that play, right?
Agreed. Yeah. So I write down, that's my note. I watch the play and you say he's got to pull that. But, I'm not in the huddle. You assume it was a zone read, but that's not always the case.
Right.
And sometimes it is always a handoff.
Right.
Maybe he's not reading that. But, and I only say that because I'm pretty sure it was Zach Ertz who was to the left who was blocking. So if he pulled it, Zach Ertz was there to block the DN, not Van Ness, but the other DN. So that's why I thought it's zone read, because he still has a blocker out there for in case he pulls it. So I agree. That was a pull all the way. Van Ness didn't care about Jaden, and I think that just reiterated my thought, right? That was their game plan going in, and the Packers, we're not going to respect him as a runner until he beats us. So, yes, Jaden probably made the mistake there, should have pulled, and, maybe they just stopped calling it that.
That was Steve Suter doing a film breakdown. There was a lot more to it. You can hear it on my podcast. He was very, very critical of the play calling, the game plan, the readiness of Kingsbury in the offense, and he really got after Joe Witt Jr. in the defensive game plan as well. And, netting it out, he came away very impressed with the Packers, Jordan Love in particular. But pretty good at doing this, and he gets into the players in more detail and grades them out, grades Jaden's performance, which he said was not very good, but he didn't get much help anywhere also. That segment with Steve is brought to you by Paramount Plus. Football Talk is presented by Paramount Plus on this show. Sylvester Stallone is back in the original hit series Tulsa King. This season, Dwight faces his most dangerous adversaries yet, forcing him to fight for everything he's built and to protect his empire. Stream the new season of Tulsa King on Sunday, September 21st, exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and sugar-free. First-round picks like watermelon, wild berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, yes, Max, I'm going to throw to it. Dan Quinn met with media yesterday, and, you know, big emphasis of the press conference yesterday was on Jaden Daniels. But there was an interesting question that I think David Aldridge asked him that got him into an answer that I'm not even sure had a lot to do with the question. DA asked him about the O-line and what he thought of the offensive line and the struggles on Thursday night. Here's what Quinn said.
Yeah, I really felt like it was almost like a repeat from Detroit. You know, they got out ahead, and I didn't like how we started, you know, really on either side of the ball. David, to say, I think you have to go back and look. It was either two punts or three punts, you know, on our first two or three possessions. They drove down some, so I didn't love the way that we started. As bad as it felt, as we got into the start of the fourth quarter, you're down a touchdown. Okay, we stayed in the fight. As bad as it felt, we didn't hit on a field goal at the end of half. We missed on a good return coming out of the half, so I thought our complementary football back and forth wasn't right. And then when it got to the two scores, then you're back throwing it all, you know, to try to catch up again. So I thought, all right, can we stay in this fight? Here's our time to go take our shot. They went down to score, and that's where I thought the game changed, man, where we had one shot to go fight for it. Didn't love our balance, honestly, to go, you know, that many runs and passes. At the half, there wasn't a lot of plays, so it looks at the end of the game way higher in the passing, which is not what you want to do against a team that's rushing and going. But I just didn't love, you know, on both sides the way we started. That's what I like. You know, there are things that I liked, you know, took care of the ball, you know, those things. But just in terms of just jumping on them and being aggressive from the start, Dave, that's the thing I didn't love.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, the admission there about didn't like the balance, the run-pass balance, was without question very interesting. You know, they ran the ball 9 times for 34 yards in the first half, but some of those were scrambles. I mean, you know, they came out, they threw Jaden, first two plays from scrimmage was a Jaden Daniels short pass. Jaden Daniels pressured, ended up getting sacked. And then a third pass. So no runs on the first possession. That was three and out. Second possession, they did try to run Eckler twice, which set up a third and seven. And then they ended up getting an illegal use of the hands. They were in third and 17. They had to punt there, which was a three and out situation. The next possession, it was pass, 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 play, scramble, pass, pass, punt. So when he says that there weren't a lot of plays, that was a six play opportunity with a first down. Then they came back, and that was the Kroski Merritt first drive, and he gains five yards on the first carry. Then it's pass, 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 Kroski Merritt again, pass play, pass play, pass play, field goal, which they made, which was good. And then, you know, the disastrous end to the first half where they got very conservative. They called a pass play, then Eckler twice, and it was as if they did not have confidence in trying to go for a score. But I think the idea that they didn't have a lot of opportunities in the first half, they had, you know, five drives in the first half. That's a lot of opportunities. That's a lot of possession opportunities in a first half. Or let me just say, it's not a minimal number of opportunities, five opportunities. But I thought it was interesting that he did admit in that particular answer about the O-line performance that they didn't, you know, that they got away from any, you know, sort of semblance of balance. And, you know, the score does get sideways, but not until the fourth quarter. You know, when they 14-3 is not a sideways score. It doesn't get you out of your game plan if your game plan is to try to run the football, or at least have running the football as an option in the game. It's 17-10, you know, early in the fourth quarter, and got to 24-10. Understood after that, you know, that you're just, you know, dropping Jaden back, trying to make something happen. But look, I think it's also important to acknowledge that against that team and without Bates, you know, because he left early, that it's very possible that Kliff didn't think they'd have any success trying to run the football with Kroski Merritt or with Eckler or with anybody else in the game. And that their best chance, even though they couldn't protect and even though the receivers weren't necessarily getting open consistently, was to still, you know, have your quarterback and have the ball in his hands. Because let's face it, we've got a history here, 21 games going into last Thursday night, of if the ball's in his hands, more times than not, he's going to come up with a solution. He'll come up with an answer to a tough situation against a tough opponent. We've seen it over and over again. So, yeah, I get that. You know, falling back on, it's still better for us if the ball is in Jaden's hands. You know, last year in that Pittsburgh game, remember that game? They couldn't really run the football very effectively in that game. And they put the ball into Jaden's hands, and it was not his best game. Far from it. Had, I think, his highest incompletion percentage. Pittsburgh's defense really got after him, sacked him. But he made enough plays along the way to keep them in that game, you know, give them the lead, remember, in that game when they were down 10. When they were down, four, they took a 10-point lead in that game with Jaden making play after play, only to lose it late on the Mike Williams touchdown catch over Benjamin St. Juste, who, by the way, was on the field last night for the Chargers. A lot of our Jeremy Chin was on the field last night in that Chargers-Raiders game. So 2/4 of the secondary played in that late Monday night game. Just interesting to hear Quinn, who typically you don't get that kind of an admission, but he would have liked to have seen, I think, a better balance. Again, may not have worked. May not have good reasons for them not to try it. Bates isn't in the game. Jaden's been a hero before. Let's go the route of Jaden, you know, avoiding this bum rush, which comes quickly, and making some plays along the way. Gary in Upper Marlboro wants to weigh in on Jaden's availability Sunday, and if you've got a solution to minimizing the number of times he gets hit in games. Go ahead, Gary.
Thank you. I don't think he's going to play on Sunday, and I think that's the right move because Jaden hasn't shown in this brief period sample size that he's going to play at his best when he's banged up. I think the three games that they lost in a row last year, at least the scuttlebutt was that he was not fully healthy, and I don't think Jaden played up that well last year. So it's too early in season to aggravate an injury. It's better to get him at full strength and then let him come back. And one thing I would do with Jaden, I would take those design runs out of the game plan. I just think that puts him too much at risk. And people say, well, Lamar Jackson plays that way. Well, Lamar Jackson is a quarterback that runs like a running back, in my opinion. Jaden is a quarterback that can run. And the difference is that I think Lamar has more of an instinct to protect himself than Jaden. Jaden runs really upright. And I can't tell you how many times when I've seen him run where the defender just misses getting a real big hit on him because he's running so upright. So I think they need to modify the game plan. And that's real quick on Tom Brady. People forget that Tom Brady was part of the Deflategate, okay, and all that stuff that happened. So I don't have any confidence that he is going to put up a wall between the Raiders and the information that he's getting from other teams. So I agree with you 100%.
Yeah, they've got to cut off his access completely. They relaxed the rules on him this summer. They can't give him access to coaches, players, and coordinators anymore before these broadcasts, period. He can show up and call the games, and that's it. Yep. I completely agree.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Gary. Back to last year, I don't feel like going down the road about just talking about, did he have a broken rib, didn't he? My gut is that it wasn't broken ribs or a broken rib. Sore, no doubt, but pain threshold different than a knee injury, etc. They let him play against Chicago. Let's not forget that, if he really was at risk, they ran him a lot. I said it in the moment last year, that's negligence. If he legitimately was hurt and at risk, they didn't hold back on the game plan. In fact, the Giant game, which was the second game after the injury, the Hail Mary game was the first. QBR-wise, it was, the second best game of the regular season for him. 95.1 QBR, ran it 8 times for 35 yards, 15 of 22, 209 yards, 2 touchdowns, no picks. He was outstanding in that game. The Pittsburgh game was not his best game. The Philadelphia game on short turnaround was obviously not his best game. But they didn't hold off on, designed option runs or tell him, get rid of the ball. We don't want to see you running around. That's my only problem with going back to that and talking as if, he didn't. He was so hurt, shouldn't have played, or that he didn't play well because the Giant game, which was, the next closest game to the injury game, was one of the best games he had all year. Steve in Rockville. Steve, finish it up for us. Do you think he'll play on Sunday, and do you think there's a solution to minimizing the number of times he gets hit?
Long-time listener, first-time caller, Kevin.
Thanks, Steve.
I do not think he'll play. I don't think he should. And solution, don't be on the field. I know Paulie said this earlier today. Don't be on the field with 4 minutes to go down by 17 points. It's been a pet peeve with me forever. Washington's not the only team that does this. Why are you playing your guys when you're down by that much or ahead? Get your players out of there. And I know you agreed with Paulie. I'm pretty sure you did. But that's my thought on that. And why they're in there? And look at Eckler and the alignment there. I can't think of his name at the moment. But why were they in there? I know Eckler hit a Achilles. He didn't hit anybody, but he was in the game.
Yeah. No, there is absolutely a fair argument for, you know, down 27-10. And by the way, the context of the 27-10, your quarterback is getting absolutely blown up on every other play. Your right tackle is losing confidence by the second. You're not going to win that football game with 6 minutes to go down 27-10. You're just not. There are some games, you know, that you might be in. Let's just say it's 45-28 and it's been an up and down the field game and nobody can stop the other. You probably want to take your swing. Like, let's get in the end zone quick, make it 45-35 and see what happens. The other night, there's a really good case for Marcus Mariota should have been in there, especially if they knew that that hit to the knee in the fourth quarter, on the first play of the fourth quarter, was had him hobbling. I didn't see him hobbling until he rolled the ankle on that final drive, but he rolled the ankle on the final drive trying to make play in a game in which they weren't going to win. I'm with you. I think that is 100% right. I got to roll. Thanks for the call, Steve. Appreciate it. I'm up against it. Thanks to Tom Shad, who joined us for the first time on the show. He is the new beat reporter for the Washington Post covering the team. And thanks to Steve Suter. Back tomorrow. Chris Russell's up next. So the stadium vote went 11-2 in favor. I think that's it. That should be it, unless there's a third vote we don't know about. Seemed like needless drama yesterday, it would seem to me. Why wasn't the vote, by the way, taken in August? Why wasn't that the one that counted the most? Lots of shenanigans, I guess, yesterday with the city council. They definitely irked Washington's front office, Mark Klaus, I'm sure Josh Harris and company, but all's well that ends well. I thought it had ended a month ago, but it is now final. Washington heading back to RFK. The second time in the last few months we have felt this joy that we are heading back to RFK. Have you seen the pictures of the demolition of RFK Stadium? Definitely. I have felt, in looking at some of those pictures, I have felt nostalgic looking at those photos. You know, that gets you if you are of a certain age and you experienced RFK Stadium for football games in particular. And there were lots of other events, but it was, and we've talked about it for many, many years, it was truly one of those places. You know, the description of stadiums, iconic stadiums, the word cathedral is always used. And it did feel at times like a religious experience on so many days, so many nights. For so many of us, the memories that get conjured up in our minds and in our hearts when you think about some of those days and nights, man, nothing was ever like it. Nothing. Any game against Dallas was 10x the electricity, 20x the electricity. There was nothing like that stadium for a late 4 p.m. Sunday afternoon or a Monday night game against the Cowboys. I mean, the buzz, the decibel level, the bloodthirst because of the rivalry and the disgust and the disdain and the hatred for the Cowboys, and at the same time, the unity among all that were in that stadium, 55,035, I mean, it impacted the game. It really did. That was a true 12th man. I mean, over the years, you know, long after RFK had shut down for football and FedEx had opened, you know, there were stories that would come out from Giant players, Eagle players, but the Cowboy players in particular were the most vocal in their memories of RFK. You know, I remember Danny White, Tony Dorsett, Randy White, Drew Pearson, all talking about the feeling of walking up those steps out of that locker room that they were in that end zone, which was, you know, for baseball, it was at one point when the Senators were there, the visitors' dugout. The Skins came out of the Senators' dugout Now, once baseball was gone, there were no more dugouts. There was no more baseball diamond. You know, there was a period of time where Washington would play games with the infield, you know, in the coming across part of the field. Now, the Senators left in 71, so didn't have that afterwards. But the Cowboys, when they would talk about walking up those steps and out into that cathedral and the chants of "We want Dallas," they said it would make the hair on the back of their neck stand up. But it was also so incentivizing because they would talk about what it was like to go in there and play well and hear the decibel level drop to a level in which you could hear a pin drop. Because I'll never forget a Monday night game. This was after the championship game in 82. So they play in January 83. The Cowboys in the NFC Championship. Everybody's familiar with that game. It is by far and away, and I've said this 200 times since I've been doing this show, it is the single most electric environment for a sporting event I have ever been in. Ever. Nothing has ever come close to that. And I've been to fights in Vegas and Super Bowls and championship games. I'll tell you, for a Maryland guy, Kohl Field House at times was really something else. But nothing like that day. The stadium completely filled 45 minutes before kickoff. Not an empty seat in the arena for a game that kicked off, I think, at 12:30 Eastern. And the place was nuts all game long. But the following season, after Washington beat the Cowboys and then went on to win Super Bowl 17 against Miami, the league did what they did many, many times, which is Washington and Dallas on Monday Night Football to open up the season. Washington versus Dallas was not only the number one rivalry in the NFL in the 70s, 80s, and really into the early 90s, maybe through the 90s until it became clear that Washington was a sinking franchise and the number of important games were diminished. They just didn't happen that often. And all of this, you know, all of a sudden Baltimore came into the league. Baltimore, Pittsburgh became a big deal, you know, and we had some others. You know, Dallas clearly had this thing with the 49ers in the 90s. They had, you know, an ongoing thing with the Eagles. You know, we understand all that. But there was nothing close to Washington-Dallas for about 25 years. You know, from about 1971 when George Allen arrived here until at least the mid-90s, there was no rivalry better than Washington-Dallas in the NFL, and most people would have had it ranked in the top five rivalries in all of North American sports. Seriously, Army-Navy, Ohio State-Michigan, Iron Bowl, Lakers-Celtics, Cowboys-Redskins. I mean, that would be, you know, those would be, they were in that category. And so Monday Night Football, Washington and Dallas opened up against each other on Monday Night Football. I don't know, it's probably 6-7 times in history. I think that it is the most, it's the game that has appeared the most in prime time, whether it's Monday night, Thursday night, Sunday night football. I think Denver Raiders is number two. I could look that up. Maybe that's changed in the last few years. But for many years, Washington-Dallas was the number one matchup in prime time going back to the introduction of Monday Night Football in 1970. The opener in 83 at RFK Stadium. This game was famous for Howard Cosell calling Alvin Garrett that little monkey. Remember that? And there was a big hullabaloo over that. Howard was such a progressive. He was so good for, you know, so many people that were minorities. Ali, the relationship, he was forgiven for that. And it was a slip up and he was forgiven for it. But it made major headlines. But the game itself, it was, you know, the Super Bowl. Doc, Riggo, Theismann, Jake, all of them will tell you, the Super Bowl was anticlimactic after the NFC Championship. Beating Dallas in the 82 season, January 83 championship game at home was bigger and felt bigger than winning the Super Bowl. It really did. So when we got to the opener of the 83 season, it was the rematch of the NFC title game. It was Redskins-Cowboys opening up the season. And remember, 82 was a strike-shortened season. They only played 9 regular season games. So there were a lot of people that thought that Washington's Super Bowl in 82, Super Bowl 17, was a bit fraudulent because the 49ers had won it the year before, and teams just, you know, never got into a rhythm in a short sprint 9-game season. Washington went during that 9-game season 8-1. Their only loss, by the way, was a regular season loss to the Cowboys. So they open up, and now we're going to play a full season, 16. Well, Washington's not going to be the team. Dallas is going to be the team. And Washington sprints out to a 23-3 halftime lead. The place was insane. It was an insane asylum before the game. You know, the defending champs opening up on Monday Night Football against their heated rival. That game almost equaled the championship game in terms of the electricity, the buildup, the whole thing. And the Skins were on fire. Theismann to Charlie Brown, Theismann to Monk, Riggo. They're rolling the Cowboys, blowing them out on national television, 23-3. Well, the Cowboys roared back from 20 down at halftime. And they came back, and Danny White hit Tony Hill on 2 bombs for touchdowns. And that's where I was headed with this, which is Cowboys, former Cowboys talked about there was nothing better than coming into RFK and quieting the crowd. And you could hear a pin drop on the last, I'm going back to look at the how long of a bomb it was. Hold on for 1 second. So 23-3 at halftime, all right? And a 75-yard touchdown pass from Danny White to Tony Hill in the third quarter made it 23-10. And then a 51-yard bomb from Danny White to Tony Hill made it 23-17. Then the Cowboys got the ball back again. They drove and they won, and they took the lead, a lead they never gave up. They ended up winning the game 31-30. And the place, that was there was something incredibly compelling about how it could be so loud and then just so quiet. And by the way, back then, you might get literally 100 Cowboy fans. Maybe it was more than that. Maybe it was 200 Cowboy fans scattered throughout. You didn't hear them. And by the way, they didn't want to be heard because it would be a rough night for them, especially after they won the game. Theismann threw for 325 in that game, 2 touchdowns, and Danny White only completed 9 passes out of 20 attempts, but for 193 yards and 3 touchdowns. And that started off a season in which Washington and Dallas would meet up later in the season, both teams being 12-2. Meeting in the next to last week of the regular season. That is the game often referred to as the fatigues game, where the Skins showed up in military fatigues off the plane, onto the buses, and they went in a matchup between 12-2 and 12-2. The 2 best records in the NFL, the 2 best teams in the NFL playing for the NFC East title and the 1 seed throughout the NFC playoffs. You know, the winner was likely to go on to the Super Bowl. Yeah, the 49ers were there, and Washington would eventually beat the 49ers in the NFC Championship game. And Washington beat the Cowboys 31-10. This was the famous, you know, Everson Walls, Dennis Thurman, Michael Downs trying to break up the fun bunch in the end zone. But they went in and kicked Dallas's ass. So they ended up splitting the 2 games. But Dallas winning that opening Monday night game was crazy. Washington's 83 team, I think, is the best offensive team. I mean, you could debate it with 91. I think 91's the all-time best team. I don't really think it's a debate. They were, you know, DVOA pencils them out as the all-time greatest team, although I think that's been supplanted recently by not the 85 Bears, not the 07 Patriots. There may be another team. They went back and did, a lot of other seasons going back to the 50s. Anyway, It may have been a Packers team that ended up being the number one overall DVOA team. I think 91 by far and away is the greatest Washington team of all time. But the 83 offense set the mark for the most points in a season in NFL history. Their two losses during their 14-2 season was that season opening Monday night loss to the Cowboys 31-30, and then a famous 48-47 Monday night loss at Lambeau. They lost two games by 2 points. They crushed the Rams 51-7 in the divisional round, held on for dear life in what was a very controversial game for 49ers fans in particular, beating the Niners 24-21. And then, of course, they got run out of the building in Tampa in Super Bowl 18 by the LA Raiders. But, yeah, seeing the photos of RFK being dismantled, you knew that day was coming. You know, I have certainly had occasion over the years to drive by the stadium, and every time you drive by it and you look at it, you're like, wow. But it was an eyesore. It turned into an eyesore, as had that entire property. That's what makes so much sense about the return to D.C. But when you see that stadium coming down, man, I remember when the Nats came to town. It was just fun to go back to RFK. I know that you could have gone back to RFK for soccer games. I just didn't. I wasn't really much of a soccer guy. But when the Nats came back, I remember going to at least a half dozen to a dozen games. And I would walk up to my old seats, to our old seats at RFK. 513, row 13, seats 1, 2, 3. About the 10-yard line behind the Redskins bench upper deck, there wasn't a bad seat in that stadium. Wasn't. If you want to, you know, weigh in with your feelings that RFK is done, they're going back, you know, this voting thing seems a little bit anticlimactic yesterday. I mean, I felt like really excited a month ago or whenever it was, 6 weeks ago. But whatever, delayed excitement, you know, now it's final. But if you want to weigh in with how you're feeling, if you've seen those RFK photos, if you've seen RFK being, you know, dismantled, demolished, with maybe your favorite memory or two of RFK Stadium, 301-230-0980. 301-230-0980. We'll take some calls on that. On the show today, Denton's going to join us at 10:35 to talk some college football. Charch will be with us during the 11 o'clock hour to talk fantasy. We've got a game tonight, Buffalo hosting Miami. I might have, at the end of the show, a smell test pick on the game tonight. We're certainly going to get into the fact that Jaden missed practice yesterday. And then we heard from Marcus Mariota. We heard from Dan Quinn. We carried that live on the show yesterday. But we'll talk about the buildup here towards the Raiders on Sunday. But if you've got an RFK memory or two as the stadium is being dismantled and demolished, and you want to call, 301-230-0980. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, the team980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Washington beats the Raiders on Sundays if. My keys to the game. I watched basically the entire Chargers-Raiders game from Monday night. Watched it, you know, the broadcast, watched a lot of the All-22 because, you know, when we get these AFC teams that we don't see, and it's early in the season, we haven't seen a lot of the Giants, Eagles, and Cowboys either. But it's, you know, a lot of new stuff. You know, the Raiders hired Pete Carroll in the offseason, hired Chip Kelly to be the offensive coordinator, went out and got Geno Smith. You know, that's an organization that thought about this season as a season in which, hey, we can contend. We can play for something. We can have a winning season. They're in a tough division for that. With the Chargers, obviously, the Chiefs and the Broncos, there were high expectations for Denver this year. But, you know, Pete Carroll, as an older coach, maybe that was part of it. You know, if you were going to go for a rebuild, you maybe hire somebody younger. They brought Pete Carroll in, and it's they're all in a little bit on not the Super Bowl, not a division title, but on having a winning season and contending for a playoff spot. They're off to a 1-1 start. They beat the Patriots in the opener 20-13. That was on the road. And then the home game on Monday night, they lost to the Chargers 20-9. A big part of that loss was Geno Smith throwing three picks in the game. He's thrown four in the first two games. He leads the league with four interceptions in two games. All right. I'll just say one thing about the Raiders in general. I think that this has a chance offensively, even with Mariota at quarterback, to be a big day through the air. They don't cover well. They seem disorganized defensively. You know, and Graham's been a good defensive coordinator. Now, their pass rush with Max Crosby can be a problem. So my number one key, Washington beats the Raiders if they protect the quarterback. I think that quarterback will be Marcus Mariota on Sunday. You have to account for Max Crosby, but I think if they can protect the quarterback, which they could not do against Green Bay, and by the way, part of that protecting the quarterback means to run the football a little bit. But I think so there's some big chunk opportunities, both, you know, through the air yard route and also with yards after catch against this Raiders secondary. Will Washington protect with a different offensive line Sunday? I'm not discounting the potential, not probability, but the potential that Josh Connerly Jr. could take a seat for Andrew Wiley, or maybe Allegretti takes a seat for Wiley. So at least they've got a player that they, because Allegretti hasn't played well either. I think, as I mentioned yesterday, there's a chance they could go with six offensive linemen, not because they've got an issue with protecting, but because John Bates isn't going to play more likely than not. And that sixth offensive lineman could be a guy like Trent Scott. I saw Pete Haley, who's now up in Connecticut. Pete, of course, used to be in town. I saw him tweet out, I'd love the odds on a Trent Scott touchdown catch. Remember, he had that touchdown against the Bengals. So don't be surprised if you get a sixth O-lineman who's essentially replacing John Bates, you know, and they can go 12 personnel with that, and they can throw out of that, you know, and that can be part protection as well. Trent Scott would be, if he lined up, would be ineligible. Eligible, not ineligible. Did I say ineligible? He would be ineligible. But I could definitely see on Sunday, after watching the Raiders defensively, if they can handle Max Crosby, not easy. You cannot let Josh Connerly Jr. go solo on Max Crosby. That would be negligence at the highest level after what we saw last week. Max Crosby may have the highest motor of any player in the league. Quinn said that the other day. It's so true. Every single time you watch Max Crosby, it is just a motor like it never stops. The energy level he plays with, you have to account for Max Crosby because he can wreck a game. You know, and this is one of those games which, even with Mariota, I think they can win the game, but not if they take big sacks that end drives, not if they turn the ball over because of pressure. I would imagine that Max Crosby is going to be handled by more than Josh Connerly Jr. or by a replacement for Josh Connerly Jr. But I think if they can protect their passer, again, I think it will be Mariota. We'll see. Things may have changed here, and we'll find out, I think, within the hour. I think they can throw the football. I think this could be a big day for Ertz. I think it could be a big day for Deebo Samuel. I think it could be a big day for Terry in this game. It'll be interesting if Noah Brown doesn't go. Is it Chris Moore? Is it McCaffrey? I think it'll be Moore. He's played on the outside. They're going to miss Noah Brown. You know, the players that they lost, Bates, Brown, Wise, and Eckler, that's each one stings because there aren't obvious replacements for any of them. Number one key to beating Vegas on Sunday is to protect the quarterback, because I do think that their best way to move the football, and I'm not advocating, you know, calling 50 pass plays to just 12 running back runs. You know, I want them to be able to run the ball. That's part of the protection of their quarterback, is to run the football and be able to maybe play action off of running the football. But the protection of the quarterback on Sunday is crucial, because if the quarterback, whether it is first and 10 play action or third and 9 dropback, if you can protect the quarterback, I think this will be a different game for the receivers and the tight ends, and maybe the backs as well, in terms of their ability to be open, much more so than they were against Green Bay. Number two, have to take advantage of what should be an absolute advantage Washington has defensively up front against the Raiders' offensive line. The Raiders do not have a good offensive line. Plus, one of their players, their starting right guard, Powers Johnson is his name, he could be out, and it's not a good O-line to begin with. To me, after watching what I watched in the opener against the Giants, I know it was the opener, but Kinlaw and Payne, Armstrong, this is a better defensive front than the one we had last year. Now, you know, it did a decent job against the run, although Jacobs did get yards when he needed to get yards. You know, I think the talk, and I don't know, you know, I had Steve Suter do the film breakdown. Steve talked about it was a pretty good job against the run. I still think Jacobs, when they needed him to get yards, got yards. But it wasn't a terrible night. It was an average to slightly higher average night against the run. They got torched through the air in that game. But if the mismatch against the Raiders offensive line is what I think it is, and Washington comes out with the kind of energy level and the kind of dominance they had against the Giants offensive line, I think that that's a huge advantage for Washington. I think this could be a defensive-led win. I think the Raiders could have a difficult time running the football. Did you know, I saw this stat, that Ashton Jeanty is averaging 0.2 yards before he gets contacted. That means there is immediate penetration, and he is getting hit in the backfield. He has actually done a phenomenal job of making people miss or breaking tackles just to get back to the line of scrimmage at times. Raiders' offensive line is not good. And I'll tell you what, when you, in the Chip Kelly offense, you need some time for your quarterback. And Geno can rip it. Make no mistake, Geno can rip it. He can make every throw. He's also a risk taker. I've always liked Geno Smith. And they have speed defensively. The fourth round pick, Thornton, number 10, I mean, watching him and then going back, he's a 4-3, 4-4 guy. You know, they got Jakobi Meyers, who's definitely more of a possession underneath guy. They've got some speed. So D-line, this is their game Sunday against the Raiders O-line. Stop the run, but then get after Geno and don't give him time, because if he has time, they've got burners. They've got big play ability. So I look at this game and I'm like, if we can protect the quarterback, whether it's in non-passing situations, play action, or it's in drop-back situations, obvious passing downs, there are going to be people open. And if the quarterback, if it's Jaden, I'd feel super comfortable. But I feel good about Mariota hitting wide open Ertz, hitting, you know, Terry with separation this week. I see separation. I see players open against the Raiders secondary, different than the Packers secondary. And then flip side, if the D-line can, you know, dominate what should be a banged up and not very good O-line, then the Raiders are going to have a difficult time. This is a game in which Washington can win in the trenches. And I didn't think that they did that last Thursday night. They certainly did not do that on offense against the Packers. What else did I have here? In addition to, you know, owning that line of scrimmage, you've got to tackle Gentry. Gentry hasn't gotten off yet, but he's totally capable of it. And he is a guy that can make people miss and can break tackles. He can get three when there's nothing. He can get back to the line of scrimmage when there's minus two. He can get 10 when there's four. So you've got to tackle well in this game against Ashton Gentry. I like the advantage Washington has up front on defense. I think that is a key to the game, to take advantage of that. Because if not, I could see the Raiders getting some big plays. You give Geno time, they've got guys that can get open and can get open deep. Back to Washington's offense. You really have to be more balanced, especially if it's Mariota, but even if it were Jaden Sunday. Let's be balanced. Let's get Kroski Merritt into the game. I think the running back situation plays out this way. And I'll ask Ben about this in an hour. I think it's Kroski Merritt to start. I think he's in the huddle on first and 10. I think that Chris Rodriguez gets short yardage opportunities, but I think he'll also get a series or two, you know, depending on the context of the game and how many series they have. I think he'll get a first and 10, a second and four, second and five opportunity in a series in for Kroski Merritt. But I think Kroski Merritt, Bill, will be the starter. And then I expect to see Jeremy McNichols. I know how much they like him. I know how confident they are in him as a pass protector, he's the Eckler third down, you know, back. He's not the early down Eckler replacement. But he is he's not the early down replacement, but he is the third down replacement. You cannot protect the quarterback consistently if you're going to call 50 pass plays and just hand the ball off 12 times. You know, Quinn pointed that out. Washington's got to be more balanced. I am interested to see what they do, you know, up front. You know, can they go 12 personnel, keep Raiders in their, you know, base, which is a 4-3, and can they throw, you know, off that and get people open? I think they will be able to do that. What else did I have here? Turnovers are going to be key in this game. You know, this is the way you lose Sunday, is you end up with two picks. You end up with a high throw to a wide open guy, you know, over the middle, Ertz, and it gets picked off by Jeremy Chin, maybe. Yes, he plays for the Raiders. You cough one up, you know, on a backside hit by Crosby. They haven't turned it over in two games. They also haven't gotten takeaways. If you get two takeaways, if you're plus two, I think this is a double-digit win. If you're even, I think it's a close game. If you're minus two, I think it's problematic. You know, I think they could lose the game. You could say that about almost every NFL game, but the Raiders are going to need coming in tired, maybe. They're going to need a couple of plays. You can't give it to them. They've got a good punter, and Carlson's a very good kicker. You know, so if it comes down to that, they've got, you know, two good kickers. We've got good kick coverage. And I thought Jalen Lane looked good on punt returns last week. I did. What else do I have here? Yeah. To me, it is protect the quarterback, and you can have a big day, I think, throwing the football against their secondary. Be disruptive up front on defense, because I think you can stop the run, and I think you can get after Geno Smith. And I think if you don't get after Geno Smith, they've got guys that can make plays. They've got team speed at wide receiver. Oh, and they've got Brock Bowers. Okay, they've got arguably the best tight end in football. All right, 112 catches as a rookie last year. He's not 100%, but he played on Monday night. But if you give him time between their receivers and Brock Bowers, Geno can pick you apart. He's capable of that. But with pressure, he'll put him up for grabs, and you got to make him pay. And then I do think that turnover margin in this game, I mean, you can say that about almost any game, but I think in this game, you cannot give the Raiders life by giving them short fields in this game. I see a Washington win with either quarterback, but I think it'll be much closer with Mariota. Our predictions later on in the show. All right. Ben's coming up at 11:30. We will get to an NFL preview later on in the show, but you're going to hear from Jay Gruden next. Jay jumped on my podcast, which will air later on today, but I carved out about 10 minutes of Jay talking about Jaden and how to protect him, and also just the overall thought about how to replace Bates and what to do with Connerly Jr. You'll hear the former head coach Jay Gruden next when we return. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. That was Dan Quinn. We heard the most important information, kind of what we thought we were going to hear today. Dan Quinn ruled Jaden Daniels out for Sunday. Marcus Mariota will start against his former team, the Raiders. Josh Johnson, I'm assuming he didn't say that necessarily, or maybe he did, but Josh Johnson is the backup. I thought it was very interesting, not necessarily telling in any way, shape, or form, but he was asked, you know, a couple of times. He was asked initially, I know, by Nikki about sort of the nature of the injury and how long he'd be out, and then he was asked that even more pointedly a little while later. And he was not comfortable. I was watching it, not comfortable answering it. They're not giving any information on this injury, period. Essentially, what he said was that he wouldn't elaborate, you know, on the specifics of the injury or how long Jaden will be out, only to say that he is encouraged with the progress. You know, his speed work, his throwing work. But, you know, they're not going to go fast on this. They're going to take it smart. This is a knee, not a rib injury. We've been talking about that all week. But, yeah, I think there's a mystery right now for a lot of people because of the way they have kept a lot of the information close to the vest. Yes, some of you pointed out, how did you know or have a super strong hunch when the show started that it was going to be Mariota? Well, yeah, you get certain things just a few hours away from the announcement. But I'll tell you what, right now, I don't know that anybody knows for sure the nature of the injury other than the people very close to the situation. The team, Jaden, his agent, his family, and maybe some teammates for sure. I do know that he's had a big knee brace on his knee at times during the week. And yeah, we'll see whether or not this turns into a next week thing. We don't have to worry about that until Monday. But my sense is that it will probably, regardless of whether or not he is set to play next week or not, the way they handled it this week, and I think they're smart too, they'll drag it out next week too and make Atlanta prepare for two quarterbacks as long as they can. So there you go. Jaden will miss his first start since he was drafted. Remember, he started that Carolina game and then came back the next week and started against Chicago. So his first start, missing Sunday's game against the Raiders. Week three, Marcus Mariota. The point spread, you know, dropped the other day just based on the suspicion of Jaden potentially being out from 6.5 to 3.5. It is now down to 2.5 in a lot of spots. I would imagine it'll go to 1.5 or 2 before kickoff on Sunday. All right, when we come back, my smell test picks, and we will give you a Sunday prediction, but it is official. Jaden Daniels out, Marcus Mariota in. We still don't know really the specifics around this knee injury and whether or not it is just a one-week thing or potentially more.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar Free. First round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app. Available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.